to 8. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star in the east and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him, and calling together all the chief of priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for whom you shall come a ruler, who is to shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called for the Magi and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage."
Now, in case you think I don't know this, I know the story that we read today takes place after the birth of Jesus. However, the events that they speak of would have started long before Jesus' birth. So last week we talked about Jesus the Word made flesh. Today we're going to talk about Jesus the King and what we might expect with that, or what that might mean. Have you ever wondered about the state of the world today? We all wonder about the state of the world today, but I mean, have you really pondered what's going on today and what we might be looking forward to? Ever ask this question, why can't our leaders be more ethical? Why can't people be more responsible and kind? Why can't we figure this out? Why can we not seem to get along or prevent war or starvation or greed or poverty or any number of social ills? Why can't we seem to figure that out? What is it going to take to turn things around in our world? And you know, even though we're supposed to be a people of hope and faith and believe that God is moving us towards the fulfillment of something that Revelation calls a new heaven and a new earth, there are days when I am highly suspicious of this God experience with a bunch of unruly humans. Like it's a big experiment. Then I think back to my grandparents' day and remember that they wondered the very same things. I actually remember my grandmother shaking her head and saying, "What is this world coming to?" And for thousands of years, people have been asking this very same question: what is this world coming to? Literally thousands of years. There have been some incredibly dark periods in history when people truly did believe it was the end of the world. And that didn't come. So this question, what is the world coming to, has been a constant since humans have become aware and conscious of their own fragility, I'm sure. Including in Jesus' day. Exactly the same. Around the time of Jesus' birth, our story today tells us that a group of people called Magi, or wise men — I don't know how they became kings, but anyway, Magi or wise people — set out on a quest. They were in all likelihood astrologers or astrologer astronomers, people who studied ancient prophecies and looked to the heavens for signs of those prophecies coming true. Not only the prophecies likely of their own people, but the prophecies of all ancient scriptures. Because wise people have always known to not just look at their own writings, but to the writings of other cultures to see what they have to say. So they were wisdom seekers. That's what these people were, these magi, which is likely why Matthew has them set out from a foreign country to come and find this supposedly new king of the Jews. And Matthew was very conscious in writing the gospel and concerned that people understand that Jesus was not just for the Jews, but was for all people. So he often included outsiders in his gospel. Now, contrary to popular lore, Matthew never tells us how many magi there are. No, we three kings, we don't know how many. We don't know how long they took to get to Bethlehem, where exactly they were from, or why they even thought this new king of the Jews was particularly important. Matthew is not concerned with that. All we are told is that they set out to follow some form of extraordinary sign, a star, to Jerusalem, and then to Bethlehem to pay tribute to this new king. That's all we're told. Why they go to Jerusalem is actually kind of a mystery. Now, Matthew has a purpose, but if you're following the story, they would know of the prophecies from old that this baby was to be born in Bethlehem. And they also have a star to follow. But our author, Matthew, has a purpose for sending the Magi through Jerusalem first, because Matthew wants us to meet King Herod. Sometimes called Herod the Great, he was the king of Judea at the time of Jesus' birth. Herod was a horrible man, but some thought a passable king. He was known for his colossal building projects throughout Judea. Among these works, and his most famous, is the rebuilding of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. And he made it bigger and better. He was actually a nominal Jew by birth, as his ancestors had been converted to Judaism by force. He increased commerce, made the area more affluent. He built aqueducts to carry water and improved the quality of life for many, although many more were oppressed by the system of taxes and control he imposed on them. He built a lot of monuments to Caesar Augustus, who was the emperor of Rome at the time, colosseums, gymnasiums, markets, palaces. And as long as no one threatened his rule, he had generally allowed freedom of worship. He was just this consummate politician who played all sides to see if he could keep his kingdom intact, while at the same time, he did generate a lot of enemies, including his own family. His loyalty in particular was only to the emperor and to himself. Some of the things he did: when he suspected a plot to overtake his kingdom and his throne by two of his sons, off with their heads. When his wife, Mary Ann, was suspected of cheating on him, and later in his life, when he was very close to death, he found out that one of his sons had been the one who plotted to get his other two sons implicated for taking over the throne. So, whoops, that son's gone too. And when Jewish leaders were not loyal to him, he he apparently had them killed as well and put in leaders who would pander to him. These would have been the Jewish leaders who were with him when the wise men showed up at the palace and could tell him where this new baby was to be born. This is the Herod also in our story of Jesus' birth that had all of the babies or young people 2 years and under in Bethlehem killed in order to eliminate any threat to his kingdom. A real gem, this King Herod. And this is exactly the point that Matthew is trying to make for us. Throughout history, kings and rulers and emperors and presidents and prime ministers have rarely been able to overcome their thirst for power and wealth and control. It is the rare leader in history who has acted with complete integrity and wisdom. Corruption somehow, or corruption of the system, seems to come with the position of leadership. And if someone does manage to maintain a strong moral compass, they rarely are successful in their position because they have entered into a corrupt system in which they cannot work. Worldly kingdoms always fall at some point because of the frailty and insecurity of human leaders and corrupt systems inherent in human politics. There's an interesting story in Israel's history that takes place 1,000 years before Jesus is born. And this is in a period of time when the Israelites were sort of a loosely based confederacy and they had no king. God was their king. But the people complained and decided, we need a king like everybody else has. So at the time, there's a prophet named Samuel who vehemently opposed having a king. He said, God, you're king, you don't need another king. But the people would have nothing to do with that. They insisted. So Samuel went to God, told God what the people wanted, and God eventually relented and told Samuel, yep, go ahead, go anoint your first king, King Saul. But I want to tell you this. Before you anoint that king, I want to tell you what God has to say about that. And we find this in 1 Samuel. He said, and listen for what the king is doing. He said, these will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his armies, to be his horsemen and to run before him. He will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and some to plow his land and to reap his harvest and to make his implements of war and the equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his people, his courtiers. He will take 1/10 of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and his army and his courtiers. He will take your male and female slaves and the best of your cattle and donkeys and put them to work for him. He will take 1/10 of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves. And on that day, you will cry out because of this king, whom you've chosen, and the Lord will not answer you on that day. And that's what Samuel told them. Sound about right for kings or prime ministers or government today? Hasn't changed in thousands of years. Kings or any other kind of ruler of nations have almost always been contaminated and not in positive ways by the position, unless they actually are just figureheads who have no power whatsoever. In order to maintain their power, their authority, and wealth, leaders have taken wealth from their citizens or subjects to do the work of the kingdom. They have benefited from corrupt systems and done what was necessary to maintain their power. And this has taken us back as far as history has been written. And there have been times when people have risen up against a king and tried to check these regimes with more or less success, only to put in another king who could be a little bit better or even worse. But it has not stopped this form of leadership that has existed since the dawn of civilization. And this is exactly what Matthew is trying to tell us. Matthew had the Magi go to Jerusalem first to introduce us to Herod so he could contrast worldly kings with the kingdom of Jesus. To Herod, the king who rules with power, corruption, greed, and coercion. And he says leaders like this will always be threatened when their power is threatened. So following this encounter with Herod, the Magi then move on to Bethlehem to introduce us to Jesus. Now the people expected a king to come along who was like David, one who would rule over them, overthrow their oppressors, and restore them to their rightful place in the world. But Matthew is saying, Jesus is not going to be a king like this, like the world expects. Instead, Matthew tells us, Jesus is a king, but a different kind of king, the complete opposite of Herod. In Scripture, he's called the King of Kings or Lord of Lords, and that he would have a kingdom whose rule would never end, unlike worldly kingdoms. Jesus was not concerned with worldly things. He didn't come to tell us what to do with our bodies, how to express our sexuality, what rules we must follow to get into heaven, what to do with our money, or who to hang out with in order to be holy people. Jesus wasn't concerned with that. That's what religion did to Jesus. But it's too simplistic, and it implies that God reigns very much like humans, trying to impose on us non-negotiable rules and control us through fear. That's not the kind of king we have, Matthew says. Instead, Matthew says, Jesus asks of us nothing less than our hearts. He wants our whole lives. Because when we give our hearts to this king, we will be changed from the inside out. Change will not be imposed on us from the outside in. We won't need to have anything imposed on us because we will know if our hearts are transformed what is the good and right thing to do, regardless of what the world says. When our souls, our hearts are transformed, our lives will follow, the gospel say. Our choices will be clear and life-giving for all. No kingly coercion needed. No laws of the land. So what can we expect? That kings and rulers and leaders in the world will come and go. We do, or we can pledge allegiance to, or idolize worldly leaders, but their names in time will be forgotten, left in the annals of history. Every, and I mean every, earthly kingdom that has ever existed crumbles. Jesus' kingdom, however, for 2,000 years is still strong and vibrant and will last forever as long as our lives are committed to love and compassion, to generosity and forgiveness. What is the world coming to? Well, we'll always have fallible leaders who come and go. And if we follow their way, we will get kingdoms that fail. But if our king is Jesus, if we give our loyalty to Jesus, to following Jesus, we are changed from the inside out, and we will trust, have faith, that God is at work in the world. That whatever we think, we will know that all shall be well somehow. So, what kind of king will we put our faith in? We're going to take a moment for reflection. And then you have blue cards. I hope you picked those up when you came in today. If you didn't, David, did everybody get them? Okay. Does somebody need cards? Gail, David? Gail has her hand up over here. Take a moment for reflection. And then if you can find a pen or something, there should be some in the chairs in front of you. Reflect on this. I will follow Jesus by. Your stem sentences, I will follow Jesus by. Then you can write your answer. I'm not asking for your answers. These are for you to reflect on and take home. I will follow Jesus by.